5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
Final seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
Here's your host, 6'1", former Oklahoma Sooner basketball player, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell, welcome inside the Quicken Loans Studios at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. We are so glad you are along with us on this Friday night. And truly, it is such an exciting time of year, the Eastern, the Western Conference Finals. And we're super excited to deliver and break it all down for you over the next 2 hours. What a true pleasure to have back with us from ESPN Radio, the one and only, the very talented Freddie Coleman. Good evening, Freddie.
Hello, my friend. How are you?
I'm fantastic. It's good to have you back on the show. We've got a lot of ground to cover. We've got you scheduled for a couple of segments. But I want to start off our conversation. Let's talk about the Celtics and the Cavaliers. They're about to get underway tonight. Give us kind of your takeaways from game one, because the Celtics, they got off to that sluggish start, but they made a bit of a comeback in the third quarter. Hopefully they'll get things going tonight.
Well, even if they do, they could have had all the rest in the world that they needed to get ready for Cleveland. And listen, they still would have gotten bombarded by the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I said that in the final regular season meeting between these two, where Cleveland went into Boston and just destroyed them, that was the Cavaliers' way of saying, Boston, you can get home court advantage all you want, but you're not a better basketball team than we are. And I've seen LeBron James play at a high level before, but never this long. We're nine games into the playoffs. He has clearly been the best player in the NBA playoffs. He's left no doubt about that. And the one thing I wanted to see from Cleveland was, what were they going to do in game one to let Boston know, you thought it was going to be hard, it's going to be a lot harder and tougher than you could have ever imagined. They went out there and they kept punching and kept punching, and they never stopped punching. I find it hard to believe that Boston will get a game in this series. I know anything can happen, and I hope to be wrong. But I could see another sweep for the Cleveland Cavaliers getting into the NBA Finals.
Wow. Okay, so yes, I hear what you're saying. The Celtics truly are the underdog in this particular series. But how do you bounce back? Come on, give Celtic fans a sense of hope that they can, you know, perhaps even beat the Cavaliers.
Well, it's not so much about Isaiah Thomas, because it's going to be hard for him to get his shots, which means that other guys are going to have to step up and relieve that pressure. That means you need huge games from Avery Bradley, from Al Horford. Those are the two guys that can score along with Isaiah Thomas. So if he's going to struggle, and I believe he's going to, because the Cavaliers can throw so many different defenders at him. They can throw J.R. Smith. They can throw Kyrie Irving. They can throw Iman Shumpert. They can throw LeBron James. He has four different looks he has to deal with, and those guys are so locked in defensively right now. That means if he struggles, and I believe he's going to struggle again, if you're Avery Bradley, if you're Al Horford, you have to be the guys that carry that torch and find a way to make plays. And even LeBron James said after game one that Cleveland did not play that well, and he was right, because defensively, they did leave Boston a lot of open shots that the Celtics were not able to make. They have to realize that's not going to be a recipe if you're going to win game two or any other game. But if Boston's going to find a way to even get a game and make the Cavs worried a little bit, Al Horford and Avery Bradley better step up, because I believe that Isaiah Thomas will continue to struggle in this series.
Well, LeBron, he scores 38 in the Cavs, that dominant first win. But so if you are the Celtics, let's talk defensively. I mean, how do you slow down the Cavs? How do you contain? It seems like players shy away from trying to trap LeBron James, because they do have so many options. They are very deep, and those guys, they can stroke the three.
You know what? I've said this about great players. Sometimes it's better off that they get 50 and nobody else gets anything.
Great
I always
point.
Wonder
yeah.
why more people did not do that. when Michael Jordan was the king of all, he surveyed in the NBA. Yeah. In the late 80s and early 90s, because once they got pieces around him, those pieces could hurt you as much as he would, especially in the fourth quarter. I've always been the ilk that if you have a guy that is a once-in-a-generation player like LeBron James is, you know, LeBron, knock yourself out getting 50 to 55 points. But we're not going to let Kevin Love get 20. We're not going to let Kyrie Irving get 20. We're not going to let Tristan Thompson get 10. We saw last night that LeBron had 38, Kevin Love had 32, Tristan Thompson had 20 in that game one win on Wednesday night. If I'm Boston, I'm saying, you know what, LeBron, we know you're great. You're going to get your points. You know we're going to have to make you 1-on-5 because we can't leave those other guys alone and let them get confidence. That would be the thing I would do if I'm Boston. LeBron's going to get 50? Fine. Make sure nobody else can combine for 50 points, and maybe, just maybe, you might have a puncher's chance of not getting swept in this series.
Okay, game two tonight, the Cavaliers at the Celtics tonight. We are joined by Freddie Coleman from ESPN Radio. We would love to connect with you. Join us at Twitter, at eRadioSports. And you can always go back and listen to this entire compelling interview at podcastarena.com. We always love when Freddie's on the show. So talk to me some more about LeBron James. You've covered him for many, many years. What do you see that has changed in his game? 14 years in, the growth, the patience, the maturity. He certainly learned a lot about winning a championship in Miami. But in your mind, what has changed?
I don't think anything has changed, mainly because, Alyssa, the minute I first saw him play in the NBA, you just had that sense that as great as you thought he was going to be, he was probably going to be greater. It's the same thing I thought when I first saw Michael Jordan get started and other great players in any different sport. You knew they were going to be really good or great, but you don't expect to see the kind of greatness that we've seen from LeBron James. I don't know if anything's changed, mainly because I guess this is what I expected from him, and I'm the biggest LeBron James fan of the face of the earth. Mm-hmm. I also know that he is very thin-skinned and hears everything, and he may be the most polarizing superstar that the NBA has ever seen. And I think the only athlete in this generation that's on the level of him when it comes to being a polarizing athlete is Tom Brady, the quarterback of the New England Patriots. That being said, he's always been a basketball savant. He's always understood the game and thought one play ahead. Alyssa, he was probably the kind of guy that was in the sandbox and everybody gravitated towards him because he knew how to make sure things were going to be better and equitable for everybody in that sandbox. Right. He's always had that about him. So other than body type, because you knew once you get part of NBA nutrition that you're going to get strong and your body was going to be better. But I haven't seen anything about him that would represent a sea change with me, mainly because I guess I expected that no matter what was going to happen, he was going to find a way to improve his game year after year, night after night. And I have not been surprised by what I've seen from LeBron James when it comes to that.
Well, so much attention on LeBron James. Well, let's talk about the Cavaliers head coach in Ty Lue. I really appreciate about him. The players, obviously, evidently, they really relate to him, but he keeps it simple. I mean, they've got the talent to get it done, but he doesn't make it complicated.
He also keeps it 100, and what I mean by that is you have to get on your star as much as everybody else because you know there's going to be a pecking order. Herm Edwards, who played and coached in the NFL, one of our colleagues at ESPN, he said you're going to have this many players in a roster and not everybody is going to be treated the same, but you have to be fair with everybody. And if that means you have to yell at somebody to get their butt out in gear, then Ty Lue's not afraid to do that. And I think that was really crystallized at halftime of Game 7 against Golden State where LeBron looked like he was going through the motions, and Ty Lue had enough. He said, dude, this is when we really need you. You can't be a part of this and not want to show the responsibility. Do you really want to go into another offseason not winning a championship? Do you want that to be next to your name like it was last year? He goes, I'm not waiting for you. Get it done now. I'm going to continue to yell at you. The minute that a superstar or any player knows that the coach is going to get on everybody if he feels you're not doing your job, you can't believe a kind of message that sends through the locker room. And yet Ty Lue knows that LeBron is going to, he's going to whine a little bit about getting rest and getting pieces. But Ty Lue also knows that when you get that guy those pieces, he's really going to make things work for you. So that's the one thing about Ty Lue that I've always respected the minute that he took the job. He is not afraid to say, you're LeBron James. I know how great you are. But you know what? I need you to do this. You know what? You're not doing that properly. And I'm not going to just let this slide by and let other people believe that I'm a punk as a coach trying to coach you and letting you get away with whatever you want to get away with.
Okay, so how good is this team? It's built to last? I mean, what say you over the next couple of years?
I think it's built to last as long as LeBron James is breathing. And since he's going to be breathing for a little bit, Alyssa, this team is going to be very strong in the Eastern Conference. And I will want to believe that Boston can close the gap, but it's going to take another 2 years because I know they don't have LeBron James, but you need at least a cavalcade of stars. To me, your best player can't be 5'7". I know they list Isaiah Thomas as 5'9". He's 5'7". You can eat peanuts off his head. You have to have what Golden State has. That, yes, Steph Curry's not playing well. You got Kevin Durant. You got Klay Thompson. You got Draymond Green. You have four guys that at any given time can frighten you on that basketball team. When San Antonio is healthy, you got Kawhi Leonard. If LaMarcus Aldridge gets his button gear, at least you have two guys that can frighten you. Right now, outside of Isaiah Thomas, there's not a person or a player on that Celtics team that will frighten the Cleveland Cavaliers. And you can say that about any team in the Eastern Conference. So as long as LeBron James continues to play at this level, and Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving, relatively young players, it could be another 2-3 years before we finally may see a gap, because Father Time is going to win against LeBron James. But knowing the kind of guy he is, the kind of player that he is, you get the sense he's going to make that adjustment no matter what Father Time is going to take away from him.
Okay, what about Tristan Thompson? What kind of role does he play, and what kind of numbers should he be providing?
Well, as long as he stays away from the Kardashians, he should be fine.
Okay,
his career won't be in danger as far as I'm concerned, but he is the best offensive rebounder in the NBA. And what's so good about him is he doesn't stay blocked out. You know you got to put a body on him to keep him off the boards, but he keeps moving. He's the one guy among many other guys in the history of the NBA for championship teams. He knows his role and doesn't try to go outside the box and hurt the team.
The NBA conversation continues with Freddie Coleman from ESPN Radio right after this quick timeout.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell. Would love to connect with you. Join us at Twitter at E Radio Sports. And you can always go back and listen to each and every one of our interviews at podcastarena.com. Right now, let's rejoin our conversation with Freddie Coleman from ESPN Radio. Okay, so we mentioned Tristan Thompson. What about Kevin Love? Some say that it has been a disappointing postseason play for him. He's not posting big-time numbers, 13 points and 9 rebounds. Is that a fair assessment?
No, here's why. They haven't been on the court long enough.
I mean, think about it.
They haven't lost a game in the NBA playoffs leading into Game 2 on Friday night.
Incredible.
So I don't think that's a fair assessment, mainly because they've been able to take care of Indiana 4 games, and 3 of those 4 games were tough games in that series. And then a Toronto matchup, it's not been disappointing because Kyrie Irving and LeBron James have been so good. But Kevin Love clearly understands this. Hey, I'm not going to go out there and force things, but when my time comes, I'm going to be ready. His time was in Game 1. What did he do? 32 points. He was knocking down 3-pointers. Kevin Love's at a point of his career that I'm sure maybe he would love to be the guy on a team like he used to be in Minnesota. But he also saw, Alyssa, that didn't lead to anything. That didn't lead to playoff appearances or playoff wins. Why would you want to go back to that and be the guy when you can be a part of a championship team, you play with LeBron James and Kyrie Irving, and when your turn comes, you've shown the ability to shine, especially when Kevin Love is fully healthy. So I don't think that's a fair assessment for two reasons. Number one, LeBron has been unbelievable, averaging over 34 points per game in the playoffs. And number two, Cleveland has not lost a game in the playoffs, so Kevin Love has not had to go out there and make sure he could put his imprint on the game. But when he needed to, he had 32 in Game 1. That's all that needs to be said about that.
Game 2 tonight, Cavaliers at Celtics. We're listening and visiting with Freddie Coleman from ESPN Radio tonight at SB Nation, the Big E Sports Show. So talk to me about, as far as the Celtics, they win the lottery. Who should be that number one pick?
It's got to be Markelle Fultz, the kid out of Washington, and here's why. Number one, I would not trade the pick because whoever you get in return is probably not going to be good for your immediate future or far future. If I'm Danny Ainge, I keep the number one pick because anybody that's in the league now outside of a superstar that you can get in return and no team is trading a Steph Curry, LeBron James, people like that, that's not going to happen. And number two, Isaiah Thomas believes he's a max player. His contract is going to run out at the end of next season. He's a pretty much a bargain basement guy for what he's done at $7.5 million per year. So if you're Danny Ainge, you believe he's a max player. Now you got two guys that you can play in the backcourt along with Avery Bradley that can get it done in the Eastern Conference. If you don't believe Isaiah Thomas is a max player, and that, based on what I've seen and heard about Markelle Fultz, many people believe he's going to be the next superstar guard in the NBA, not named Lonzo Ball. They think he's a better prospect than Lonzo Ball. If that's going to be your guy, then you got a guy that's a little bit bigger, has a little bit of a better handle, and will be able to deal with the rigors of the NBA and not get worn down, as we saw from Isaiah Thomas at times in the regular season and in the playoff series against Washington. Danny Ainge holds on to this pick because he has to make sure if Isaiah Thomas stays, we got a nice three-guard rotation. If he decides to leave, I still have Avery Bradley and this guy that's going to help us in the future, especially having a bigger guard at the point guard position that has shown the ability, at least from what I've heard and seen, that he can play with anybody in the backcourt, and he's not going to have to worry about trying to share the basketball, trying to force that fit.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you bring up even Lonzo Ball. So talk to me. I mean, LaVar Ball, is this guy for real?
The sad part is he is for real. The sadder part is he knows that people are going to play the game with him and allow him to have those platforms. And I remember when this first started to jump off, I warned everybody,
really,
you are not going to win this game with LaVar Ball because you are giving him what he wants. The more and more attention he craves and gets, the more it's going to increase his brand. And believe me, he's doing all this for the betterment of his son. I completely get that. But it's something that people aren't used to, where he's not a helicopter parent. He's a pterodactyl parent, if you think about it, compared to other sports parents that we've seen.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think plenty of this is to reduce as much pressure on his son getting ready for the NBA. Because no one is going to talk to Lonzo Ball about his dad. His response has been, that's my father, I love him, he's going to be who he is.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty much shut down that narrative. LaVar Ball does not mind having all of that focused on him, because now that means his son can just go out there and play basketball and be the best basketball player he can be. In effect, he's running interference to make sure whatever media obligations or media scrutiny is going to be on his son, his dad is willing to step in front of that and say, hey, focus on me. This way Lonzo Ball can get ready for the NBA, get ready to play for the Los Angeles Lakers, who have the second pick in the draft, and go about his business from there. And I think LaVar Ball, and people don't want to hear this, but it's true, at a certain point when he realizes his son is going to fulfill what he believes he's going to, he'll take a step back. He'll do his own thing, and it won't be to the level of bluster that we've seen and heard from so far. But a lot of people don't want to hear the fact that LaVar Ball is crazy, but he's crazy and smart like a fox.
Mm.
He knows exactly what he's doing. He's very calculated in what he says. How you react to it, that's on you. That's not on LaVar Ball.
Okay, but you talk about the Lakers, they own that second overall pick. Should they trade that pick?
No, they should keep the pick because you need star power. And Magic Johnson clearly understands that. And you have a guy potentially, Lonzo Ball, that could be that star power for your basketball team because he's a Southern California kid. He's always wanted to play for the Lakers. He has that game about him. He has that flash. Magic Johnson knows that really worked with Showtime. And also he knows that this kid is a hard worker, is going to work on his game. That was one of the many things that people forgot about Showtime with the Lakers in the 80s, Alyssa, was how hard Magic Johnson worked and James Worthy worked and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar worked to make themselves a better basketball team. Magic does not have to worry about the work ethic of this kid because this kid is going to do everything he can to be the best basketball player he can be. You put that together with flash and put pieces around him. That's why the Lakers should not trade that pick, because if Markelle Fultz is the best guard in the draft or the best player, Lonzo Ball is a pretty close second.
Okay, but you know what I think about the relationship LaVar Ball with Magic Johnson potentially? I mean, how do you think that's going to work? I mean, with this bit obnoxious father.
Well, to quote my father, Freddie Coleman Jr.,
mm-hmm.
Magic is not going to put up with any foolishness.
That's right.
He will let it be known right away to LaVar Ball.
He'll set the tone.
You can do all that and say all that stuff away from this basketball team, but you're not going to interrupt what we're trying to do here, what we're going to do with the Los Angeles Lakers. Magic has dealt with strong personalities before. I mean, this guy was in the same locker room with Charles Barkley, Karl Malone, and Michael Jordan, part of the Dream Team. If he can deal with that, LaVar Ball's a kindergartner compared to the rest of those guys. He is not going to be an issue for the Los Angeles Lakers. And that's why Magic, I love what he said. He said, hey, LaVar can say what he wants, but that's not going to keep us from not taking his son, because we believe his son. And LaVar Ball, if I have to handle him, we will have that sit down, but he's not going to affect how we're going to do things with the Lakers. He let it be known, like, hey, I know what you're doing, I hear you, but you're not going to undermine what I'm trying to do with this basketball team, especially with your son being involved.
Well, I just wonder, we've got about 30 seconds, how Lonzo Ball will be received in the league next year, because it seems like he'll get some pretty intense punishment.
Well, he's going to get intense punishment because you don't want a guy coming into your house eating off your plate. I mean, any NBA player trying to make a team or trying to make a contract, you're not going to let a guy come into the league, any rookie, and do that to you. Everybody has gone through that. Michael Jordan went through it. LeBron James went through that. Everybody's going to have that happen. Here's the one thing that I think a lot of people need to realize. I wonder how that's going to play in the locker room, because players can be very cruel in a joking manner, and they're going to give him a little bit of the business.
Mm-hmm.
But Lonzo Ball seems to have that kind of personality. He'll just shrug it off, and guys will see that and feel that and say, hey, he can joke with us about his dad, but yet when he goes out on the basketball court, we're a better basketball team. You're going to have some mean-spirited guys in that locker room, and if there are those kind of guys, it'll be figured out early, and they won't be part of that team anymore. But I get the sense that whatever's thrown at him in his own locker room when he joins the Lakers at the second pick in the draft, he'll be able to handle that because his personality tells me that he's going to let that stuff roll off of him and concentrate on what's really important, making sure the Lakers are relevant again in the NBA.
He is simply the best. Freddie Coleman from ESPN Radio. You enjoy Game 2 tonight. Thank you so much, Freddie. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Liston. Have a great weekend as well.
Thank you. Much more coming your way right here in hour number one at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. You stay close.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back to SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm Alyssa Walker Campbell, and you know what? As promised, it is time to go around the horn. We are going to zero in on the San Francisco Giants. Boy, it has been a bizarre year for them, a team that has struggled in 2017. So we have invited Giants beat writer for MLB.com. He is also an author, Chris Haft, to provide some answers. And we also are going to highlight his brand new book. Good evening, Chris.
Alyssa, it's great to be with you.
It's wonderful to have you on the show for the very first time. So we're looking for some answers. Chris, I mean, 2017, as I just mentioned, it has been brutal for your Giants. So break it down, pinpoint the reasons why, because this is the worst start in more than three decades.
Yeah, Alyssa, it's not too hard to really sum it up, especially the start of their season, because they pretty much were inferior in every aspect of the game. There's not too much analysis needed because it was just all there, you know, and just, you know, stark reality playing out on the field almost every night. They didn't hit it, and they didn't hit enough. You know, they have this kind of theory. I guess a lot of teams do, but especially a team that's traditionally built on pitching and defense like they are annually, if even so, that they have to score four runs a game. If they just get four runs a game, they feel that they have the pitching to hold down the opposition. And that normally that's the case. This year they haven't been able to get those four runs a game a lot of times. And even when they would get the four runs a game, the pitching would fail. Or both would fail, and they'd lose, you know, 8-0. You know, they had some ugly losses here recently on a recent road trip, especially in Cincinnati, losing, you know, 13-4, 13-5, that sort of thing. So they didn't score enough. They didn't pitch enough, starting and relief. So it all had it up to the worst record in the National League. And I think at one point maybe close to or did have the worst record in the majors. Now, recently they've picked it up a little bit. They had just completed a 5-2 homestand.
That's right.
And the things that were going wrong are now going right. So, you know, there's plenty of time for them to pick it up, but I'm not saying they're going to storm back in the first place. I mean, they've got a lot of work to do because they've dug themselves quite a hole.
San Francisco Giants beat writer for MLB.com. You got to check him out. Fantastic writer. Chris Haft is with us for the very first time at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I promise we're going to talk about his new book here momentarily, but we just want to get the pulse on the Giants. Yes, they had won five games in a row and then lost to the Dodgers on Wednesday night. So, I mean, how surprising is this? I mean, you got someone like Madison Bumgarner. I mean, this was quite unexpected coming into the season, right?
Yeah, well, what's unexpected about him was that he would be, I guess you could use the word careless, you know, so careless as to go dirt bike riding on a day off in Denver, just outside of Denver, and have an accident and mess up his shoulder and go on the disabled list probably through the All-Star break. I mean, that's hurting the team quite a bit right there, you know, for an ace pitcher to go out and do that during the season, even in the off-season. I mean, you're a professional baseball player and you're paid to be on the field, and he's not on the field. So that was a disappointment for the Giants in more ways than one. But they've tried to overcome that. The fellow who replaced him in the rotation, Ty Block, who's also left-handed, is no Madison Bumgarner, but he's competitive and he tries to do, you know, they're doing what they can to pick up the slack for Madison.
So what is Madison? I mean, what was his response to that for making that foolish decision to put himself in that type of position and to have that kind of accident? I mean, how did he explain himself, Chris? Can you share the story?
The day he spoke to the media in mass, I really can't say he was contrite. He never flat out said, "I'm sorry." He did say it in so many words, but, he just said, I don't know. He kind of pleaded temporary insanity, I guess, if you will. Also, in so many words, said, "I don't really know what I was doing." Well, I guess you didn't. If people really want to split hairs here, I guess he said he was on his way back to the truck or whatever the home base was, rounding third, if you will. I guess they were just about done with their ride when he hit a bad patch in the road, I guess, or whatever, and slipped. So, what if he had skirted that bad area, or what if he had just, managed to finish the ride intact? Who knows what kind of shape the Giants would be in. They wouldn't be worried about their pitching as much as they are now. But, again, pitching is the least, seems to be the least of their worries. They've got what they really need to do is shore up the hitting. But getting back to Madison, if he's able to come back, after the All-Star break, that will almost be like getting a new pitcher in the at the trade deadline. So again, all hope is not lost for these guys, but they've got to they can't afford to any more lapses.
I was going to say that would give them certainly a big boost following the All-Star break, but just overall, as you were saying, it sounds like it's from an offensive standpoint what needs to happen in order to get the Giants moving forward, and they can't continue to have any more drop-offs, obviously, getting off to such a slow start to the 2017 season.
Well, they've lost Hunter Pence now. Well, Hunter Pence, the right fielder, is currently on the disabled list, and he wasn't hitting all that great before he went on the disabled list. They're counting on him to provide a lot of run production, a lot of power there in the middle of the order. So they're missing that element, which has not been good for them so far. Meanwhile, on the other hand, Buster Posey has picked it up, at least as far as power. Just when a couple of local columnists were saying he's mediocre, he's really not that good, which of course is, to a lot of real Giants fans, that's almost that's blasphemy here. Mm-hmm. But Buster's picked it up. He's either tied or second in the other night, he was tied for the league lead in home runs in the month of May with 6. He seems to have rediscovered his power stroke. He's driving the ball a lot better, and that'll be if he can regain come close to his 2012 production when he was a league's most valuable player, that would almost compensate for a mediocre or a substandard year from Pence if and when he comes back from the hamstring injury. They've had some production around the middle of the order. It's been kind of fluctuating, and that is showing their performance. So if they can get it together offensively, it should be a promising second half for them. But whether it'll be enough to qualify for a postseason spot, I don't know.
Hey, Chris Haft is with us, San Francisco Giants beat writer for MLB.com. Did you know he has just released his new book, Our Good Friends at Triumph Books? They take such good care of us. The title of Chris's new book is If These Walls Could Talk, San Francisco Giants, stories from the San Francisco Giants dugout, locker room, and press box. We're going to dive into that here momentarily. I was asking Chris, what's it going to take to get the Giants to move forward? But what about, possibly moving assets? I mean, is that a possibility that something's on the horizon, Chris, that perhaps we might see happen, seeing some movement with player personnel?
Alyssa, it's funny. They've never, if you're talking about a sell-off, they've almost never done that. They've always tried to acquire, beef up, even in the years when they were not contending. About the only guy they got rid of at the trade deadline, to strengthen another team, was Ray Durham, the second baseman, who went to move. I believe he went to Milwaukee at that time. So selling off is not their style. They have certainly almost every year acquired somebody to try and strengthen the club, but they of course have to I think they'd have to be at least of somehow make it back to the 500 mark or be a little bit above that to actually jump into the fray there at the end of July, toward the end of July when, you know, trade deadline's approaching and, you know, teams are starting to deal. So, again, you know, it's, they'll do what they have to do. They've never been shy about, again, dunk jumping into the trade market. But I don't know if their performance doesn't warrant getting a productive left fielder, that sort of thing, somebody where they could really fill, somebody who could really fill a hole with them right now, they won't do it.
Chris Haft is with us, the San Francisco Giants beat writer for MLB.com. We've got to take a quick break. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell, and that's right, we're going around the horn with Chris Haft from the San Francisco Giants. He's their beat writer for MLB.com, and we're going to be talking about his brand new book. Okay, so let's talk about some of the positives that took place from this past week when we talk about the San Francisco Giants as zeroing in on them. How about the big news on Wednesday that the Giants announced that Barry Bonds will be enshrined into their Wall of Fame before the game against the Marlins? I believe that is in the month of July. Chris, you've been doing this a long time. Have you had an opportunity to visit with Barry? He spent 15 of his 22 years with the Giants and set the home run record in 2007.
Always a fan favorite, and I know a lot of people outside of the San Francisco area just don't understand that, but you know, Barry Bonds had his best years. He had some great years in Pittsburgh, of course, but he had his, you know, just stupendous years with the Giants.
Sure.
And so, people will forgive him, you know, just about, you know, of course there's all the, you know, talk about PEDs and stuff like that. I won't get into that right now, but people can draw their own conclusions. But, you know, people here love him. I mean, that's really the best way to sum it up. And I'm sure that's going to be a well-attended ceremony there on July 8th. And I know the fans are really enthusiastic and happy about him rejoining the organization and getting these kind of accolades. Certainly, he belongs on this little wall of fame that they have there. He'll always go down as one of the franchise's most memorable players, greatest performers. So I think people are celebrating that. And, you know, the way the Hall of Fame vote has progressed, developed over the last few years, it looks like he's on his way to a spot in Cooperstown. Well, he'll probably join Mays, McCovey, Cepeda, Marichal, and Perry as having a statue outside of AT&T Park.
Do you think, Chris, that overall, you're not talking about Giant fans, but just Major League Baseball fans have softened their stance towards Barry Bonds?
I think so. I don't know if it's just strictly a time thing. Time heals all wounds. Also, legally, you know, he was cleared of everything, so that made a huge difference, I think, in people's perceptions and the Hall of Fame voters who vote.
Hey, Chris Haft is with us. A few more minutes at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We would love to hear from you. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports, and you can go back and listen to this entire conversation with Chris Haft at podcastarena.com, podcastarena.com. Chris does it all. Of course, I was talking about that he is a beat writer for MLB.com. Also, has just released his new book, If These Walls Could Talk, San Francisco Giants Stories from the San Francisco Giants Dugout, Locker Room, and Press Box. And all of our listeners, we love to read. So talk to us. When we open up the book, what will we find, Chris?
Hopefully a little bit of everything that's to satisfy the, you know, contemporary fans, younger fans, and being somewhat long in the tooth myself. You know, certainly stuff to please older fans, people whose hair is starting to turn a little gray or white or whatever. But I wanted to try and tie the present with the past. So I started out by describing or recounting the ceremony that the Giants had before the home opener in 2016, where they honored Jim Davenport, longtime third baseman for the team, and somebody who passed away in February of that year. he remained a coach with the organization as he, you know, in his later years, and developed relationships with the all four members of the homegrown infield that they had at the time: Brandon Belt, Joe Panic, Brandon Crawford, and who they still have, those three, but also Matt Duffy, the third baseman who left in a trade last summer. The fact that they celebrated the past by using these players from the present, that really symbolized what I call, what the organization likes to call, Giants DNA. You know, pride in the uniform, pride in the past, and how they use that pride to kind of fuel their efforts in the present. They remain strongly rooted in the present, and yet, you know, tip the cap, so to speak, to the greats who came before them.
Yeah, great insight on the Giants' DNA, you know, what it means and how it permeates throughout the organization. Also, inside the book, If These Walls Could Talk, San Francisco Giants, a tribute to Candlestick Park and the moments and memories that formed within its walls, right?
Boy, you could go on and on. People could go on and on about Candlestick Park, and maybe they wouldn't have a lot of good things to say, but I think people would also admit that a lot of, for a generation or two of Giants fans, and even just baseball fans in the Bay Area, that's where they learned to love the game. It's where we learned to love, I'll include myself in that, it's where we learned to love the game. I mean, yeah, the wind was howling. I mean, you'd walk through those double doors in the, you know, lower deck, and your cap would fly off, and you'd be lucky if you got it back, you know, because the wind was just, was just gusting so hard. But, I mean, it was, as Dave Rigetti, the pitching coach, once said, you know, he thought it was the greatest place in the world because it was where the Giants played. You know, mm-hmm. When you're a little kid, you don't know any better. In a strange way, it was a fun place to go to. Now, as you got older, you realized what a dump it was, and of course, it had to be replaced. And it just so happens they replaced it with maybe the, you know, the best park in the major leagues, but in AT&T Park. But nostalgia, being what it is, you know, people have somehow grown nostalgic for Candlestick Park, and mm-hmm. So. If you're any kind of Giants fan, you probably have some connection in some way or another to Candlestick, and so that's why I want to make sure to include a chapter on it.
Chris Haff's new book, If These Walls Could Talk, San Francisco Giants, has been with us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, right here in hour number one. Check him out. He is the Giants beat writer for MLB.com. And I tell you what, Chris, I've got your number. We are definitely, it's an open invitation. We want to have you back on the show. Thank you so much.
Oh, it'll be a pleasure. Thanks, Alyssa.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way in hour number two at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. It's going to be time to tee it up as we go inside the ropes with Larry Miller, PGA professional and author of his new book. We will be right back.